Section 2, Farming the Plains, An American Story. On September 15, 1884, the O'Keefe family left their home in Nebraska and headed west across the state in a covered wagon to start a challenging new life on the open plains. The O'Keefes faced a new environment that lacked many things that people in the East took for granted, including easy access to water and wood for building a house. Without trees to use as timber, they built their house from chunks of sod, densely packed soil held together by grass roots. To obtain water, the family had to drill a well 134 feet deep and operate the pump by hand. They let nothing go to waste. In summer, they ate weeds from their garden as well as the vegetables, obeying the rule, if you can't beat 'em, eat 'em. There were other settlers in the area, and they would gather to socialize and help each other. When disaster struck, however, each family had to be prepared to face the trouble alone. In January 1888, a three-day blizzard struck without warning. As Charlie, the youngest son, reflected, "By the end of the three-day blizzard, we were in fine shape to take care of our stock. Many others did not fare so well, but that's life. After all, we said to each other, this was a new country, and folks had to learn how to look after themselves." Adapted from Western Story, Recollections of Charlie O'Keefe. Geography of the Plains. The O'Keefes and their neighbors were early settlers in a region known today as the Great Plains. This region extends westward to the Rocky Mountains from around the 100th meridian, a line running north and south from the central Dakotas through Abilene, Texas. Rainfall on the plains averages less than 20 inches per year, and trees grow naturally only along rivers and streams. For centuries, this open country had been home to vast herds of buffalo that grazed on the prairie grasses. Nomadic Native American groups had hunted the buffalo for food and used buffalo hides for clothing and shelter. Major Stephen Long, who explored the region with an army expedition in 1819, called it the Great American Desert and concluded that it was almost wholly unfit for cultivation. He predicted that the scarcity of wood and water would prove to be an insuperable obstacle in settling the country. Reading check. Examining. What geographic factors created challenges to the settlement of the Great Plains in the late 1800s? The beginnings of settlement. During the late 1800s, several factors undermined the belief that the plains was a great American desert. One important factor was the construction of the railroads, which provided easy access to the Great Plains. Railroad companies sold land along the rail lines at low prices and provided credit to prospective settlers. Railroads opened offices throughout the United States and in major cities in Europe where land was scarce. Posters and pamphlets proclaimed that booking passage to the plains was a ticket to prosperity. The catchy slogan, "Rain Follows the Plow," coined by a Nebraskan to sell the idea that cultivating the plains would increase rainfall, encouraged settlers. As if to prove the saying correct, the weather cooperated. For more than a decade, beginning in the 1870s, rainfall on the plains was well above average. The lush green of the endless prairies contradicted the popular belief that the region was a desert. In 1862, the government also supported settlement in the Great Plains region by passing the Homestead Act. For a $10 registration fee, an individual could file for a homestead, a tract of public land available for settlement. A homesteader could claim up to 160 acres of public land and could receive title to that land after living there for 5 years. Later government acts increased the size of the tracts available. The Homestead Act provided a legal method for settlers to acquire clear title to property in the West. With their property rights secured, settlers were more willing to move to the plains. When settlers arrived on the plains, they often found life very difficult. The lack of trees and water forced them to build their first homes from sod cut from the ground and to drill wells up to 300 feet deep. Summer temperatures often soared over 100 degrees Fahrenheit. Prairie fires were a constant danger. Sometimes swarms of grasshoppers swept over farms and destroyed the crops. In winter, there were terrible blizzards and extreme cold. Despite these challenges, most homesteaders persisted and learned how to live in the harsh environment. Reading check. Analyzing. What is the relationship between private property rights and the settlement of the Great Plains? The Wheat Belt. For those who had the financial resources, farming could be very profitable on the plains. Many inventions and new farming methods revolutionized agriculture. One approach, called dry farming, was to plant seeds deep in the ground where there was enough moisture for them to grow. By the 1860s, farmers on the plains were employing newly designed steel plows, seed drills, reapers, and threshing machines. The new machines made dry farming possible. Unfortunately, prairie soil often blew away, especially in a dry season. Many sod busters, as those who plowed the soil on the plains were called, eventually lost their homesteads through the combined effects of drought, wind erosion, and overuse of the land. Large landholders faced similar problems, but they were able to make quick profits with the help of mechanical reapers, which speeded the harvest. Mechanical binders tied the stalks into bundles for collection. Threshing machines knocked kernels loose from the stalks. These innovations were well suited for harvesting wheat, which had the advantage of withstanding drought better than corn and some other crops. Wheat became as important to the Great Plains as cotton was to the South. During the 1880s, many wheat farmers from Minnesota and other Midwestern states moved to the Great Plains to take advantage of the inexpensive land and the new farming technology. This productive new wheat belt began at the eastern edge of the Great Plains and encompassed much of the Dakotas and the western parts of Nebraska and Kansas. Commercial farming. The new machines allowed a single family to bring in a substantial harvest on a wheat farm covering several hundred acres. Some wheat farms covered up to 50,000 acres. These were called bonanza farms because they often yielded big profits. Like mine owners, bonanza farmers formed companies, made large investments in property and equipment, and hired laborers as needed. Economics. Farmers fall on hard times. The bountiful harvests in the wheat belt helped the United States become the world's leading exporter of wheat by the 1880s. American wheat growers faced rising competition, however, from other wheat-producing nations. In the 1890s, a glut of wheat on the world market caused prices to drop. Some farmers tried to make it through lean periods by mortgaging their land. That is, they took bank loans based on the value of their property. If they failed to meet their mortgage payments, they forfeited the land to the bank and had to abandon their farms or work them as tenants for the new owner. By 1900, tenants cultivated about one-third of the farms in the corn and wheat areas. Adding to the problems of Western farmers, a prolonged drought began in the late 1880s, killing crops and forcing many farmers to go back east. In Kansas, William Allen White, editor of the Emporia Gazette, described a disappointed farm family he saw returning from the western part of the state. There came through Emporia yesterday two old-fashioned mover wagons headed east. These movers had seen it stop raining for months at a time. They had heard the fury of the winter wind as it came whining across the short burned grass. They have tossed through hot nights, wild with worry, and have arisen only to find their worst nightmares grazing in reality on the brown stubble in front of their sun-warped doors. In hard times, some homesteaders gave up and headed home, but others soon arrived to take their place. Reading check. Identifying. What technological innovations helped farmers cultivate the plains? Closing the frontier. In 1890, the Census Bureau reported that settlement throughout the West had been so rapid that there can hardly be said to be a frontier line. In reality, much land was still unoccupied, and new settlement continued at a brisk pace into the 1900s. The news that the frontier was closing, however, concerned those who saw it as the end of an era. They believed that unoccupied land at the frontier had provided a safety valve of social discontent, the idea that Americans could always make a fresh start. Most settlers did indeed make a fresh start, adjusting to the often hostile environment of the plains. Water from their deep wells enabled them to plant trees and gardens. Railroads brought lumber and brick to replace sod as a building material and coal as a fuel. The O'Keefes were typical of small-scale, self-sustaining homesteaders. They never got rich, but they got by. Those who struggled, as the O'Keefes did, to support themselves emerged with a more realistic view of the West. It was not a land of limitless opportunity. As Charlie O'Keefe learned, the real story of the West was not about heroes who rode off into the sunset. It was about ordinary people who settled down and built homes and communities through great effort. Sterling and steady men and women whose lives were spent doing the work as it needed to be done. Reading check. Examining. Why did some people feel that the closing of the frontier was the end of an era? Social studies skill builder. Interpreting statistics. The railroad and Native American population. Year, 1860. Approximate miles of railroad track in U.S., 30,000. Approximate Native American population, 351,000. 1870, 53,000. 323,000. 1880, 116,000. 318,000. 1890, 208,000. 265,000. 1900, 259,000, 248,000. Why learn this skill? Often presented in graphs and tables, statistics are collections of data that are used to support a claim or an opinion. The ability to interpret statistics allows us to understand probable effects and to make predictions. Learning the skill. Use the following steps to help you interpret statistical information. Scan the graph or table, reading the title and labels to get an idea of what is being shown. Examine the statistics shown, looking for increases and decreases, similarities and differences. Look for a correlation in the statistics. Two sets of data may be related or unrelated. If they are related, we say that there is a correlation between them. In a positive correlation, as one number rises, so does the other number. In a negative correlation, as one number rises, the other number falls. For example, there is a positive correlation between academic achievement and wages, and there is a negative correlation between smoking and life expectancy. Sometimes statistics may try to show a correlation when none exists. For example, a report that people who go fishing are less likely to get cancer may be statistically true, but lack any real correlation. Determine the conclusions you can draw from the statistics. Practicing the skill. Study the table above and then answer the following questions. What claim does this set of statistics seem to support? 2. Is there a correlation between miles of railroad tracks and the Native American population? Is the correlation positive or negative? Explain. Applying the skill. Interpreting statistics. Create a survey with two questions for which you believe the answers will show a correlation. For example, you might ask, how many hours of television do you watch per day? And how many hours of sleep do you usually get at night? Organize your statistics in a chart or graph. Then look for a correlation in your data and evaluate your results. Write a paragraph summarizing your evaluation. Glencoe's Skill Builder Interactive Workbook CD-ROM Level 2 provides instruction and practice in key social studies skills.